gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hello. Ooh. Good morning. I'm practicing my greetings. Remember, I got a complaint letter yesterday
that
it's rude to just launch right into my show, that I should practice some sort of greeting,
yes,
such as hello.
Good morning.
How'd that go? How'd that go so far?
Oh, it sounded
Anybody? Stilted. Anybody? Bueller?
Hello.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. By the way, I did botch yet another movie reference.
Mm-hmm.
When I was discussing that letter yesterday, Tim is correcting me. Tim in Eureka.
Yes.
I think it's fairly certain that when I make a movie reference, I will botch it in some way. However, it's always oddly close in some weird way.
Sure. That's the way your brain works.
I said, who is that character that all he says is hello? Because that's what I was... And I was sort of right. Steph, regarding the hello guy is Richard Libertini, and the hello script came from the movie Crazy People. Yes, that's correct.
He was
also in All of Me, where he assisted in the screwed-up transference of Lily Tomlin into Steve Martin's body. The end. Tim and Eureka. Yes, it's the same guy. It's the tall guy with the beard, and that's why I was thinking. But All of Me wasn't the movie in which he played the hello character, but you know what? It's close enough. For the amount of Chardonnay I've drank in my life.
You're just a font of misinformation.
So are you,
Mr. I know, that's what you called me
yesterday. The Army Corps of Engineers built the Hoover Dam.
Well,
wrong.
They built many other dams around the country that are still standing.
You
so there.
Turned me into John McLaughlin. Wrong! Also, Kevin, with some alternate greetings with which I could open the show. I'm going to have to go back to the broadcasting barn and brush up, apparently. Hi, Steph. I have a few. We are on the air now.
That works.
He would like that in a godlike voice with a lot of echo.
A lot of reverb.
I don't know how to do that. We are on the air.
I need to produce that.
Okay.
Okay.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, that's compelling radio.
Tap, tap, tap. Is this thing on? All right, Kevin. Everybody, thanks for your suggestions. I think I'll just start the way I normally do, like... Hi, it's Stephanie Miller Show, and then Rebecca says something about how she hates me and I'm a skank.
Right,
right, Rebecca?
Stupid hoe. Yes.
Exactly. Thank you.
So,
now we all feel much better.
I have a question for you. Are
Rebecca
you,
Taylor?
Yeah, are you going to the Melissa Etheridge party this weekend?
Yes. Check this out. I have a date with Hal Sparks. I am taking him with me to the Melissa Etheridge birthday party. In L.A. on Saturday. Yes.
That poor guy. Now,
Rebecca, Mama is coming home. I'll be doing the show from the L.A. studio Friday. Have you cleaned the condoms off the ceiling yet? And have you disinfected the various man ick
in
the studio?
Yeah, the boy stank.
The musk will be here for you when you come back. But I don't want to see you on Friday. Are you actually going to be here?
Yes. I will be slapping you in the head every time I walk by the
sick.
Screener booth like I used to.
She's
I'm calling
be...
in sick.
No, you're not.
I'm not feeling very
No, you're
good.
Not. I'll go get you. I'll give you that loving slap in the back of the head like I do on my way to the bathroom when you're screening calls.
Yeah, don't talk to me.
Really?
I just hear Stephanie Miller Show, can you hold?
Smack.
I give her a loving little, you know. Yeah. All right. And then I'll care. Exactly. She likes it.
Sounds more like a rabbit punch.
All right. Here's the Rebecca. You understand this because the invitations usually come through you, and you know that something always goes horribly awry, right? When I get invited to these fancy things,
right? The second you show up, it goes.
Yeah.
Awry.
In fact, if Melissa Etheridge is listening now, I'm probably going to get disinvited because you know how it is. I can't. I'm a radio geek, and I was looking on the Evite yesterday, Chris.
Yeah.
And I see like Meg Ryan's coming and all that. I'm like, oh God, there's going to be some embarrassing disaster because there always is when I go to. This is why I don't leave my house.
You're going to spill something. You're going to get a black eye.
Well, let's review. Last time, and this was a long time ago, and trust me, I've never been invited back anywhere.
Uh-huh.
I got invited for some reason to Carl Reiner's 60th birthday party.
You did?
Whom I love, yes.
Yeah. Huffington was there, and...
Rob Reiner's house.
Right.
So the first thing I did is I mistook Mrs. Reiner for Larry David Weiss' wife, Lori, because they do look very similar. But Lori David was not amused, and then in a literally a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, I was seated next to her and Larry David at dinner, and it was awkward. I was like, oh, hi, Mrs. Reiner again. And then you remember Christine Lottie was sitting next to me, and I spilled wine on her during the, You know, last time I saw Rachel Maddow, I spilled wine on her parents, as I always do. That's kind of that's a tradition.
Well,
and then you remember, when's the last thing? Then I went to the Blue State Ball in Minneapolis, and I, in a little, you know, attempted comedic pole dancing routine, I almost pulled down an entire
light
thing on a whole bunch of people. Not a bunch of very nice Minnesotans.
You're just a human Hindenburg, aren't you?
I really am. This is why I stay home every night drinking box wine and French kissing my dogs, because
no one will have me.
I'm a radio geek, and you know when I go to things like that, my teeth get farther and farther out. You know I become the Chris Farley character. Like, if I see Meg Ryan, I'll be like, I love it when Harry and Sally and the thing. So you guys are you doing the karaoke.
You don't know that Meg
Ryan... I live in New York now. Want to meet me at the top of the Empire State, remember, like you did in Sleepless in Seattle?
You don't know that Meg Ryan hasn't sent her regrets.
Says she'll be there. Trust me, I'm checking the yeses. And I'm geeking out. Yes, there's a lot of famous people coming.
I hope Melissa survives you.
Yes, I really do.
So listen, Hal Sparks, by the way, is in tomorrow. It's Hump Days with Hal tomorrow, but it's his fault if anything happens. He's my handler. He's coming with me.
Today is slump day without Hal.
Exactly.
Oh,
dear. All right, so I'm sure we'll have some stories, or TMZ will, on Monday.
TMZ is more likely to have stories. You'll be on D-listed.
Yeah, right. My usual little D-listed stack. I'll be like,
damn it, I'm in the D-listed stack.
So what happens is, like, I geek out preemptively. I'm just, all right. By the way, so Bill Press is here again today. He's on his book tour, so he's in the other studio.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and may I just say, I am sweatier and stinkier today. It is, summer has begun here in New York, which is magical. As you know, we normally make our own gravy, but it is so humid today. Mm-hmm. I walk to work, and I'm literally just
It gets that way there.
Yes, I'm a sweaty, stinky little mess with a big sweat mustache.
It was in the 50s here this morning.
Whatever.
It's not even supposed to make it out of the 60s today here in Los Angeles.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, Rebecca, all I care about is the studio. I don't know if there is a disinfectant strong enough. You may need to use some Corexit in the studio to disperse the mookiness, because Mama has not been back in months, and it's got to just, seriously, have you seen pictures of Jim Ward's bathroom?
I have.
No.
Oh.
Does it look like Whitney Houston's?
Yes,
it looks exactly like Whitney Houston's bathroom in that one National Enquirer picture.
Right. Without the crack pipes, of course.
Sans the crack vials, but still. Close enough. All right. So lots to get to today. We await David Mattingly, the CNN national correspondent, who is covering the Top Kill live.
Correct.
So we will find out, literally, minute by minute, what's happening with the Top Kill and the Flavin and the... junk shot and the something.
Oh, junk shot doesn't come until later this week if the Top Kill doesn't work.
You know, we've gotten entirely too jokey and cavalier about this disaster, haven't we? It's just that it has turned us into a nation of Schneiders. Have you listened to our shows the last few days?
I know.
Rebecca's taking all those calls. Yeah, Rebecca, here's what what they need to do now. You see, is you need a crescent wrench, and then what happens is, when you shoot do you know what I'm saying? I've never gotten this many technical letters in my life about what the thing and the distance and the thing and what's going to work and what's not going to.
Honestly, I don't know what any of them are talking about, and I just put them all up. Here, talk to all these people.
You don't really have the technical expertise to us.
I'm like, what are you talking about? Sure, go ahead.
She's like, what am I, Stephen Chu? I don't know if your suggestion has any validity. Just here. Can you dial a phone? Fine, I'll put you in. That'd be funny, because you know Mama does have the smartest listeners in class.
That's right.
One of my listeners will solve this friggin' thing. You just wait. I'll be like, that's what the guy from Nick from Seattle said last Tuesday. All right.
Can I say something about the Gulf oil spill that you're probably not going to like?
No. Anyway, coming up, we also have Representative Bobby Scott. We have Carl Frisch from Media Matters for America to co-host Right Wing World. And Mike Papantonio,
yes,
who is, this is a legal term, Rebecca, he's going to sue the bejesus out of BP.
And how?
talk to him in hour three. Yes, Chris.
I do see a parallel with Katrina with this, in that, no. Nothing that Obama's doing. However, in that we're watching, you know, a slow motion disaster happen before our eyes, and we're just helpless to do anything about it.
Thank you, and that's where the analogy ends. Thank you.
We'll okay, just I just wanted to make
yes,
that point.
I understand. Okay. All right, we have so much to fight about, so many things to get to today. Like I say, we will, David Mattingly, as soon as he can, right, we will talk to him. He's obviously, he's a skosh bit busy.
A little bit, with you know, with his employer.
By the way, I think I was already on some morning television show. They're filming something in Times Square, and I walked through it. I was like, what the hell, what's going on?
No, the Dancing with the Stars people, you know, the finale was last night, so Dancing with the Stars was in Times Square today.
Okay. So there you go. I was the geek walking through the back there.
And the Pussycat doll won last night.
Oh, yay. Love me some Pussycat dolls.
Yeah, but she's like a professional dancer and singer, so I don't know why she was really on the show.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like her, though?
Not really.
No. Think you do. Mm-mm. 18 minutes after the hour, back with the very latest on the oil spill and the top kill as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Remember, you heard it on this channel first.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
You're a rock star. Get the show on. Get paid. All that glitters is gold. Only shooting stars break the mold.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Chris, I forgot to tell you.
What?
The latest calamity to befall me here in Calcutta where I moved.
Where? What? What?
I have mice.
You have mice?
Yes. And let me just tell you something else I found out last night. My dogs are completely useless in any sort of protective situation at all, despite the fact that they weigh 4,000 pounds apiece.
Did they run from the mouse?
They didn't. The way they wouldn't even come anywhere near. I was like thinking, that's weird. It sounds like one of my dogs is eating upstairs because, you know, they have their big, you know, you've seen their big food bins out all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they're on free feeding. They have a, you know, it's just feeders.
Sure.
And I was like, Max and Fed are both down here. That's weird. And, yes, and then I went up there and saw one mouse running away, and then I heard another behind there, and I, of course, freaked out like you would.
Cause you scream like a girl.
I'm a chick, yeah. And I screamed for Max and Fred, and they hid downstairs. They would not come up.
Well, you probably screamed their name like they were in trouble or something.
No, I was like, I was in trouble. I was like, this is what would happen if there was some sort of emergency situation. They were cowering downstairs. The fact that I even dragged Mag over to Max, I'm like, come, so get the something, dude. And he just sort of looked around, and then he was like,
Well,
like, my dogs actually are, like, the slowest dogs in the world. You've seen them. It looks like Jurassic Park. They're so slow. Like, yeah. Like he actually could have. Yeah, like Max could have caught the mouse anyway. Would have been like, oops, I missed it again. All right. Well, I'll be on the couch. Anyway. Yeah, because you know what? It was almost a magical love story. My landlady took me out to dinner last night. Isn't that sweet?
Well, that's nice.
Although it is a little pathetic in that she knows what a pathetic loser I am.
Yeah.
She called and said, I was just thinking, what are you doing? I figured you're not doing anything. I was like, well, yes, you were right. Would I like to? Yes, sure. And so she took me. It was very sweet.
Oh, that's sweet.
So like my, you know, they're like my parents, Mel and Gail. They're, you know, they're
so
fabulous.
They're like,
although I now that about that, I told her about the mice this morning. I'm not sure how that's going to, I don't think there'll be any more free dinners for me.
So they're like Fred and Ethel Mertz.
They are my ropers.
Yes.
after the initial scuffle about the dog door, it's turned into quite the, you know, quite the love story. Yeah, they're very parental. I told you what they said. I wanted to put in a dog door. I have a little patio. And she's like, they're like, what? No. They're both screaming at me like parents at the same time. Mm-hmm. They're like, what? No. That's crazy California talk. Not New York. No. Didn't you hear the story about the news anchor? He came through the dog door and killed her. Yes, Melvin, tell her. And it just, you know,
but that was in Arkansas. That wasn't in New York.
I don't know. I don't know. Although now I think she probably, it turns out, being right in terms of the protective instincts of Max and Fred. Should something come through the dog door, they'd be like,
they're not protecting you. They don't care about
you.
They'd
be like, come on in, there's mice, but I don't, come on in if you want.
It's because you have a giant feeder for them. They don't depend on you for food. So they don't feel like protecting you.
I mean to rethink that whole thing.
Yeah.
They don't have to do anything for their food. All right, Dave in BP on Top Kill Day. Hello, Dave.
Good morning, Mama. Real quick, first of all, I'm not sure you need to worry about mice because they could be baby rats.
Oh, good. Thank you. You know, that's what I'm thinking. I saw it out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, that's kind of a big mouse.
Yeah. So anyway, somebody on the live blog yesterday, you said, recommended Aquaman for this BP fix.
Yeah.
Yes.
Clearly, Namor, the Submariner, is a better choice because he already has a bad attitude.
Oh
sure. You know, and that's from what?
The Hall of Justice as well, I believe.
No.
Oh?
He's a mutant. His father is a sea captain, and his mother was from Atlantis.
Oh.
But he's already pissed off at people because they're wrecking the ocean. Because they've been for 100 years, and he's had an attitude about
this
whole time.
This is well beyond my pay grade.
No, I think, speaking of mutants, BP executives, at least they speak their language. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is true.
A mutant at least would... You know what's odd about this story is really kind of any suggestion is just as valid as another one, really fictional or otherwise.
Yeah.
Let's go to David in Washington. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Dave.
Morning, Stephanie. Morning, Mook. Hey, something's been really bugging me this morning. I was stomaching 3 hours of morning schmuck on MSNBC this morning, and he's sitting there whipping himself up into a frenzy, getting all, you know, PO'd that Barack Obama's not showing leadership in this oil catastrophe, when not enough, and they're sitting around on the round table, and not enough's being said, or nothing's being said, actually, about, you know, those sweetheart deals that Cheney and Bush gave those same oil companies, specifically British Petroleum, and it's just driving me nuts.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, look, I think that's not some sort of mystery that we had a couple of oil guys in office, but... clearly, even the president now has said MMS is clearly too cozy, right, with the oil companies, Chris? I mean, the problem is, I will say I agree with you on that needed to be fixed. But, you know, I also got to say, like Jonathan Alter just said, who just wrote this book about the president's first year, he said literally, and he has a pretty good sense of history, he doesn't think any president has ever inherited a hand this bad. So it's just... You know, in my opinion, he's been trying to fix a lot of stuff. This is something that clearly he didn't anticipate, an oil disaster of this magnitude. But, unfortunately, that's what it's taken now to go, oh, gee, I guess we really need some regulators that will, what's the word I'm looking for?
Regulate.
Yeah, did you see this, the MMS report about the report about the government's oil drilling regulator accepting gifts from the oil industry. Yes, we'll talk about that as we continue. 29 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller, you, my darling, look perfect.
Thank you.
But you run your mouth at these things. I'm giving you a 100-word limit. Here, I got you this counter.
Are you serious?
You've got 97 left.
34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll-free from anywhere. Representative Bobby Scott calling in momentarily. Let's go to Lucas in Chicago on the oil spill. Hello, Lucas. Welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, go ahead.
Just calling to express my disgust for the oil spill. Nothing fancy. I saw the link this morning to the live video stream. Have you guys seen that yet?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen. It's awful. They're all awful. It makes you sick to your stomach. The old pictures.
It really is. And I think the video really puts into perspective the magnitude of it. I mean, I knew how devastating it was, but to actually see it pouring out of there like that is just blew me away. But, you know, just wanted to put a word out there to remember the 11 people who died on the oil rig, too. I don't think...
Yeah, no, I said that early on. I was like, you know, it's interesting, you know, different from the mining disaster. You just, I felt like hardly anybody was even saying anything about that.
Yeah,
you know,
and
I mean, it is such a huge ecological disaster that's going to affect so many people, and yet you kind of go, what, and those guys were just dispendable? It's like, oh, yeah, and the guys that were on the rig, whatever, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's just between that, the mining disaster, and everything else that seems to be going on, it's discouraging, but, you know, got to keep our heads up, I guess.
Chris, I was telling you, I've spent some time with some union folk, and I have to say, we obviously talked about the mining disaster and this, and it just, and that's part of what just burns me up. The you know, Republicans use any opportunity to union bash. This is what unions do. They protect workers. They protect, you know, there's some sort of standards in place. I mean, this is, I was just talking about the, what's it called? MMS, the, I always forget the Minerals Management Service.
Yes.
It's what, here comes the punchline. They oversee the oil industry. Ha, not really, psych. The Interior Department's watchdog group issued a scathing report on the government's oil drilling regulator, accusing its employees of accepting gifts from the industry, doing drugs, and exchanging pornography-filled emails.
Great.
That's what they were doing instead of making sure there were things like, you know, acoustic switches and the blowout preventer actually prevented something. Employees at the Minerals Management Service under fire for the massive oil spill in the Gulf regulated companies while negotiating employment with them, a finding that may bolster claims the agency is too close to the oil industry and lacks the independence to regulate the industry. As if catching MMS employees literally in bed with industry officials wasn't enough, MMS safety inspectors were flying high in private jets, taking bribes while allowing oil and gas companies to fill out their own safety inspection forms. Said Democratic Representative Nick Rahal. His committee was behind the report. The violations detailed in the report took place before the Obama administration took office, by the way. Just FYI, 2006 to 2008. But, you know, you're right, Chris. It's something clearly that needs to be fixed. But,
absolutely.
You know, he had a big old plate of things that needed to be fixed from the Bush administration. But, you know, interesting to see if the right wing will be mentioning this report and that preceded Obama, the president yesterday.
From the very beginning of this disaster, the SBA has acted quickly to assist fishermen and fishing-dependent small businesses.
And, Small Business Administration. That's what that is.
Yes, thank you. Annie in Los Angeles. Hey, Annie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I listen to you every day.
You're a good girl.
Every day that I do from 6 o'clock in the morning. But I think as Chris said this morning that he was comparing Katrina. He could find a correlation between Katrina and this mess that's down there now. The only difference that I can see is that during Katrina, there were bodies floating around in water. They could have done something about that. They could have done something about the people on top of roofs.
Yeah.
We can't do anything 5,000 feet below ground.
Yeah, well, that's why I've said from day one, Annie, it's a bad analogy.
Yeah, so we can't. We shouldn't compare those two, not at all. We know it's bad, but let's not compare those two things, you know?
Well,
and just work with them. Let them work to do, because they're the only ones can go down. Well, they can't even go down there.
Well, Annie, I mean, the other thing is that, you know, they had massive warnings that this hurricane was coming. They certainly had warnings that the levees were not up to par. You know, so there's a lot of, and then the federal response, I think, speaks for itself. Everybody watch that on TV.
Right. I just don't want them to compare because the things are so totally different.
That's right.
And you are the only, well, not the only sane voice, but you are always the only sane voice on that show. I love you.
Always?
I am always the only sane voice, certainly
always?
On this show and really anywhere. Thank you, Annie.
You're welcome.
Thank you. What a woman of exquisite taste in broadcasting.
I think I'm going to retch over here.
She's someone that really knows how to separate the chaff from the wheat in a radio program, don't you think, Chris?
Sure, Ms. Miller.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Stephanie in Madison. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi,
hey,
Steph.
Hey, guys. Just a couple of quick points. It's good to know that Max and Fred will be taking a nap while Steph and Billy are trapped in the well. I mean,
yes. They
aren't going to come and save you at all.
Yes,
but
yes. Yes, Timmy would have drowned in the well if Max was in the role of Lassie.
Long time ago. I was watching the PBS NewsHour last night, and they had some bastard people person on, and he was, like, saying that, Oh, was it us that said it was only 5,000 barrels a day? Mm-hmm. It was blaming all these other people. I am so sick of these guys. They won't admit to anything.
Well, I mean, and the other thing is we saw, what's his name, Hayward, the CEO. We've seen him on tape going, oh, the impact will be very moderate, and, oh, it's a big ocean. The amount that's going in is tiny. It's like, you know, somebody needs to tell him to shut his Hugh Grant pie hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrid. It's absolutely horrid.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Steph. Yeah, you, Jim and I, you were joking about this yesterday, Chris, mm-hmm. but seriously, I know you think that all Americans are just, you swoon at your English accent and you sound so adorable, but shut the hell up.
And plug the hole.
Really, it's just a teeny tiny, but you have seen how big the ocean is? My goodness.
You know what, how would he like it if all this oil was washing up on Blackpool Beach? The British wouldn't like it too much.
Yes.
But since it's not on their shore, they don't seem to care.
Mm-hmm. Art in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Art.
That statement you made, how are you?
I'm good, Art.
I was a Democrat until Reagan came in office, but he took over from Mr. Jimmy Carter, and he left him a bundle of mess. 20% inflation, about 18%.
I don't believe it was as high as 20%.
And he turned it right around within a year.
This did he, Reagan did, by cracky?
He doesn't know what he's doing. By
it wasn't as high as
20%. You're making fun of me, aren't you?
Isn't no, I'm not.
Nice? That's beautiful.
No,
that's
I'm not.
Beautiful. Hell, make fun of me. Make me a hillbilly, right?
Well,
no, I'm not making you a hillbilly, but you actually did say that by cracky to me once, I believe.
My darling, I go by the truth. Okay. I don't lie.
Uh-huh.
He inherited a mess that's unbelievable.
Why are we talking about Reagan and Carter? I don't understand.
Because you said that Obama inherited the worst from any other president. That was a damn lie. Carter was the worst.
I think I was quoting Jonathan
Reagan
Alter, who said that.
Within a year, didn't yeah.
Jonathan yeah. Alter said
you know
that.
Why he became a Republican?
Why?
When Reagan said, "You go on strike, you're fired." That's my man.
Uh-huh.
I'm a union man, by the way. But I don't listen to the union boss.
You're a union man that supports union busters.
No, I don't. I use no, not union
yeah, Reagan,
busters.
Reagan was a union buster, sir.
The union bosses are very wrong. They're in bed with the Democrats.
So why are
party.
You in a union?
And the guy that originated, the guy that originated the union said, "Do not get close to any political party. Stay separate."
So why are you in a union?
Why are you in the union then? And what? Because, and is the union supposed to run itself?
Yes. The bosses we have now, they took over. They want power. They got power. They're playing golf all year round. I told them off one time. They said, "We're going to get you this, and we're going to get you that."
And they do get you stuff.
Nothing unless the company makes a profit. Say, you can't go against the company. You got to work with the company, not against.
So once again, we ask, why are you in a union then? Why are you? Why do you say you're a union guy?
What's that?
Why are you in a union?
Because I need the union against some of the big shots that are just as bad as those bosses in the union. Some of them bosses in the company are just as bad. The two together.
Okay. Scott, all right, Art.
Sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. No, all right then. Sure.
Well then.
Sure. Sure. He did. I was not making fun of him. He actually did say "by cracky" to me once, which I adored. Who says "by cracky" to you anymore?
Donald Rumsfeld. That's the only other person
exactly. You don't get a good smattering of old man phrases these days.
By gum.
Cracky, young lady, that's a lie.
That's a damn lie.
It's a damn lie, apparently.
Yes.
Reagan inherited a worse mess. Okay, then.
All right. Mm-hmm. You keep thinking that, sir.
I need the union. Okay, well, all right. He would like a union that runs itself, that has no leadership of any kind.
All right.
I wonder how you would negotiate with a company, say, if there's nobody in charge of that. I wonder if, like, everybody just talks at once.
It would kind of be anarchy.
Yeah.
Dogs and
cats.
That's
a little joke
together.
Like some stand-up comics used to do. You know, they go on stage like, "Hey, thank God, you know, good night, everybody, whatever, hello, everybody, and hey, what's your name?" Everybody just say it at once, and then everybody would say their name at once, so you can't really hear anything.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what, I guess, the union negotiations would be like.
Oh my God.
Who's in charge? Nobody? Okay, everybody just talk at once then. Sound just like this show.
That's right.
Okay, let's.
It sounds like Hump Days with Hal, actually.
Nancy in Buffalo, you're on the stage. Like this show, no one's in charge.
Right.
Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Stephanie. Well, it's kind of hard to follow that anti-union member, but...
Ain't it, by cookie?
Anyway, I just had a suggestion for your opening greeting in the morning.
How about cheesing?
Or when you start the show, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a line from the Truman Show that Jim Carrey used to use. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. That way you would cover all your time zones.
Sure. Yeah. That is a fabulous idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. You know what? Do we still have our time zone information? Because that's really true. She's exactly right. The good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.
That's right.
Because people don't realize that not only is it a different time where you are right now in many cases, sometimes the show is played at a different time in different places. So
right.
Sometimes we need Jim Ward to explain it.
When listening to radio broadcasts in the United States, one will often hear broadcasters give time checks. For example, one might hear references to the top of the hour, or the world is on fire, dogs are sleeping with cats, it's a crisis of biblical proportions, 17 after. Some listeners might be confused by the lack of specificity. Why not say 11:17, for instance? It may have escaped your attention that the United States has 9 different time zones. Atlantic Standard Time, Eastern Standard Time, Central Standard Time, Mountain Standard Time, Pacific Standard Time, Alaskan Standard Time, Hawaii Aleutian Standard Time, Samoa Standard Time, referred to as VTC-11, no one knows why, and Chamorro, not a Mexican dessert, Standard Time. And don't get me started on Daylight Savings Times, which is observed inconsistently in all 9 time zones for different durations or not at all. To further complicate matters, if one is listening on a so-called podcast, one can listen at the time of one's own choosing, making time checks irrelevant. If you really want to know what time it is, get a freaking watch.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Yes. People on the live
blog, so noted.
People on the live blog were afraid that Art was going to launch into a story about his onion belt.
47 minutes after the hour. By Cracky. Jeez, and crackers, look at the time. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Woohoo! Golly, that sure was fun!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 52 minutes after the hour. Carl Frisch from Media Matters for America coming up after the top of the hour to co-host A Right-Wing World. In the meantime, Representative Bobby Scott of the great state of Virginia. Good morning, Congressman.
Stephanie, how are you?
I am all right, although I am, you know, just glued to the TV like most people on this oil spill. What are you feeling today? Boy, it's just a hope and a prayer that this top kill works, this latest thing, right?
Well, you hope. I think what we have figured out is that nobody knows what to do. And
yep.
So when you talk about new oil drilling, you ought to recognize that we don't know what to do now, and we're just sort of holed up. We don't have to close down. Maybe don't close down anything, but certainly don't drill anything new until we figure out what's going on. The government accepted the representations that if a spill happened, they knew what to do. Turns out they didn't. That they're trying and guessing, and 60% chance of this and 30% chance of that. And it's obvious that when they first said we might expand oil drilling, my reaction from the East Coast to Virginia was that the risk was much greater than any potential reward. And now we know what those of us who said that were talking about.
Well, I mean, absolutely. You know, of course, nobody in their right mind would hope for this, but it literally, I mean, talk about a visual aid to make your point. I mean, a majority of Americans in the latest CNN poll, 51% to 46%, now disapprove of the president's handling of the crisis. I mean, at this point, though, I think... You know, I'm in the middle on this representative in that I'm. What more can he do at this point? This is the problem. Is you know he's not Aquaman.
The problem is we're now finding out that no one knows what to do. If he took over, he would have to do something, and I think the technology is such that nobody knows what to do. And how we got in the situation, how we got the oil companies representing that they knew what to do if something happened, and now we know that that was just a misrepresentation. We'll deal with that later. Right now, the focus is cutting off the flow, and obviously we've devastated entire industries and entire beach areas, hundreds of miles, and the way they're talking, the stream might bring all oil up around Florida and up the East Coast. So I mean, people talk about the dangers, and what do you get out of it? I mean, a couple of cents a gallon gasoline decades in the future is all you're talking about, and a few jobs, and the jobs that have been destroyed in this oil spill are greater than any potential job creation that they
mm-hmm.
may
you know,
have.
And
that's what we meant by the risk just isn't, the reward just isn't worth the risk.
Exactly. I was listening to one oil spill expert suggested the president add an element to his response plan, a pledge to create a government-run fleet capable of dealing with the next blown well. I'm with you on how about if we don't drill?
You got enough drilling out there, so you have to do something. And the focus now is to try to stop this one. As soon as we get that done, we have to regroup and see what other risks are out there, and what representations have been made by these oil companies that they know what to do when the time comes, and when it's obvious that they were just they didn't make the investments and the backup plans. And this is what happens. So we need to review everything we've done.
I believe the guy. Oh God, Chris, am I saying that right? General Honoré.
He had
a good idea that he suggested the administration start collecting money from BP immediately, set up a streamlined system for individuals filing claims, and explore the possibility of assessing daily fines against BP for every day the well is not capped.
I think BP is going to be hard pressed to stay in business after this is over because the damages are going to be probably more than the company is worth.
Yeah,
they're Republicans. Are Republican in the Senate and talk about nobody's too big to fail.
Exactly. When you do something like this, you should be. Congressman, before you go, I want to talk about you are hosting the premiere of a viral video urging the support and passage of the Youth Promise Act today. Tell us about that.
Well, the Youth Promise Act, it takes a different approach to juvenile crime. The approach that we have traditionally taken is waiting for young people to drop out of school, join a gang, mess up, get caught, and then get into a bidding war to what slogan or soundbite they're going to get sentenced under. We have used that so-called tough on crime approach to the point where we now lock up a greater percentage of our population than any country on earth by far. And if you look at the amount of money we're wasting, the Pew Research Center did some research and calculated any incarceration rate over 500 people per 100,000 population was actually counterproductive. We're at 700 and some per 100,000. 10 states lock up African Americans at about 4,000 per 100,000. And if you just do the back of the envelope arithmetic on how much we're wasting on counterproductive incarceration in those 10 states, you could spend over $3,000 per child in that area every year. Or if you target the money to the one-third of the children at risk, you're almost up to $10,000 per child per year in wasted sloganeering. The Youth Promise Act takes a proactive, evidence-based approach. It requires the community to come together and a proven methodology of bringing the community together and coming up with a holistic approach to have a comprehensive, evidence-based approach in reducing crime. And the Youth Promise Act will fund those. Everywhere you've done that, the crime rate plummets, and we save more money than we spend.
Congressman, we're running out of time. Where can people see this video at some point?
It's going to be viral. If they go on my website, we will be able to go to youthpromiseaction.org. Mm-hmm. Youthpromiseaction, all one word.
And it's bobbyscott.house.gov.
And we have a link to it at stephaniemiller.com. So.
Okay. Congressman Bobby Scott, thank you so much for taking time for us, as always, and thanks for your good work.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. There he goes, Representative Bobby Scott. 58 minutes after the hour, back with Carl Frisch and Right Wing World on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12. The phone number toll-free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Tomorrow, Hump Days with Hal has been moved to tomorrow.
That's right.
Yes. Hal unavailable today.
Hump Days with Hal.
Yes. And we have, of course, the wildly popular Face the Grayson tomorrow with Congressman Alan Grayson. And Edie McClurg live in the studio with the Mooks in L.A.
That's right.
Oh, you need to clean up a day early. Mama will be back in the studio with you on Friday.
But I know.
You need to... Listen. You got to let chicks in the fort this week.
Oh, my God. This place is a pigsty.
Once you're... Edie McClurg is going to plot.
She will.
At least launder your underwear or something before she gets there.
You always dress up for guests.
All right. Not for me. You'll be back to your usual.
Well, you never dress up for me. You always come in with a ball cap and Uggs.
No. You're Mooks. All right. In the meantime, it is time for Frisch.
Carl.
Carl Frisch.
Exciting.
True Media Matters for America.
So inviting to me.
Good morning, Carl Frisch. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I must warn you, today's right-wing world is a little crazier than normal.
Oh, God.
Let's start with some dollops of sexism, shall we? Apparently, Rush Limbaugh makes sure that he gets a fill-in with his who's as much of a feminist as he is.
Yes.
Who is this? Walter Williams?
Walter Williams.
My wife just came in and made me lunch after she was mowing the yard. So,
okay, good. You have her under control.
Absolutely.
I guess you've learned a lot of things from me.
I've been listening to you for a long time. She does a lot more chores now than she used to.
Oh,
so
okay, yeah,
that.
Right. I believe in keeping wives under control.
Dear.
Yeah. Precious, isn't it?
It's too bad Rush never learned to keep other things under control.
Yeah.
Let me get this straight. His wife just mowed the lawn and made him lunch? Is that what...
That's right.
That's got to be lovely to be Mrs. Whoever that guy was.
Yeah, it's probably a pleasure.
Okay, now here is Walter Williams once again to talk about, I think, what we can all agree on and what a dope Rachel Maddow is. What?
Here's my suggestion to Rand Paul. I think that he ought to vigorously defend his position.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to take principled positions when you're discussing the ideas with people who have little understanding. That is, he was discussing the idea with Rachel Maddow. I've never watched the show, but I just caught a glimpse of it when this whole controversy came up. And she's a person of little understanding.
Yeah.
What?
That's what they give Rhodes Scholarships out for.
Yeah.
That's what they give them out for. I think she took the online course, Rhodes Scholarships for Dummies.
Yeah,
I think
go make me a sandwich, woman.
And mow my lawn.
Yeah, Rachel's not aware that she should be making some guy lunch and mowing his lawn instead of hosting a television show and getting a Rhodes Scholarship. Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear exactly what happened during that interview, by the way. He said that essentially he supported getting rid of the public accommodations part of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which is about everybody's head explode, including people in his own Republican caucus. And Rachel Maddow started asking for specifics on how that would affect people. That doesn't seem gotcha. It seems like she knew exactly what he was talking about. And I'm not saying that Rand Paul is a bigot, because I don't think he is personally.
Well, let me just say that even Rand Paul disagrees with Sarah Palin that it was a gotcha interview. Even Rand Paul says it was a fair interview.
He's not personally a bigot, Stephanie. He's philosophically a bigot.
Yes.
There's a big difference.
Yeah. It's in the thought bubble. It's contained just in the thought bubble. All right.
Right.
Charles Krauthammer on the Britt Baer Show.
The view that this announcement by the White House of $500 million and 1,200 National Guard is a serious effort, a serious way to show seriousness about this is total nonsense. This is a PR stunt. It's Lucy and the football.
Oh, I see.
Sending more troops to the border is a PR stunt.
Yes. Once again, the president can't really do anything right, can he? Secure the border people, I guess, aren't happy. McCain said, no, that's not enough. You had needed to send a billion before I'd be happy now.
Well, you know, McCain's used to giving half of what people ask for. like you just said, the president cannot do any. I mean, it's like a scene from South Park or something. Send people to the van. Send people to the border. Send people. He's sending people to the border. That's just a PR stunt. A PR stunt.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Well, you know, John McCain won't be happy until they, finish the dang bitch.
You're one of us, McCain. That was one of the strange. If anybody hasn't seen it, they need to go to YouTube and look at the Star Wars reenactment of that commercial.
Really?
Oh
my God, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah. I got to see that. All right.
We'll post a link to it at your Facebook page, Steph.
Okay, great. You know what? Hold the phone, Carl. Michael Savage is going to say something crazy now.
It was little Mussolini, Junior Doc Obama, who told them in no uncertain terms, don't you dare think that I'm not in charge. I'll show you. You know, this is going to require a real good psychologist to figure out this man. I put Obama on the couch before the election. I know he has a woman problem because of the peripatetic nature of his mother during his upbringing. We understand that we all have problems as a result of our childhood. Only this man is the president.
Wow. So he's psychoanalyzing.
He has a woman problem.
For a second, I thought he was talking in the third person about needing to be under the care of a doctor.
Project much?
So what kind of parent issues does one have when they choose to get rid of their given name and go by the name Savage?
Right. Yes.
Instead of Wiener.
Hatred all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. He got rid of his own Wiener, and there's not a lot of guys that do that, you know.
No, and like, that name was far more apropos for him, given his radio skills.
Right. All right.
I think that's what Allen Ginsberg used to call him, too.
When they were in bed together? Oops, sorry.
Glenn.
I know it was skinny dipping, guys.
Glenn Beck on the Fox News.
We are headed towards global governance.
Blah, blah, blah.
Governance. Not government. There is a difference, and they're going to be sure that that's pointed out. And I will later on. But just like everything else that I have said on this program, they're going to immediately, he's crazy, he's a madman, he's a fearmonger, he's saying, unstable things, it's sedition, whatever.
Okay. See how he was too, he outsmarted us there. Yeah.
Governance is French. Gouvernance. Regime. It's so obvious, isn't it? It's almost as obvious as fluoridation.
Don't you love how people, they think they can throw you off by going, oh, you're going to say I'm crazy, aren't you? It's like, well, yes.
Well, you know, they do say that if you're truly crazy, then you can't, you wouldn't think that. Like, you wouldn't say, I'm crazy. You wouldn't be able to acknowledge it. But I don't think that's the case when you presume that people will call you crazy. So I think he's still certifiable. His expert on global governance, just to give you an idea of how research-heavy this new strain of thought from Glenn, or strain of consciousness from Glenn Beck is a columnist from WorldNet Daily, the birther central of America. So he spares no expenses when tracking down these stories.
Exactly. All right, I'll leave it to the hysterical prostitute toe-sucker Dick Morris to be the first one to throw out impeachment. What?
This, at a minimum, we're talking about a congressman offered a high-ranking job. Mm-hmm. This is a de facto bribe, no?
Well, yeah, it is.
What did the president know, and when did he offer?
Absolutely. This scandal could be enormous. It's Valerie Plame, only 10 times bigger.
In other words, an impeachable offense.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
Oh, are they saying outing Valerie Plame should have been an impeachable offense?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Like,
wait a minute.
Well, you know, it's funny, the thing about the Internet is that it holds on to news stories over time. most ethicists say that there's no problem here. And if there is a problem and it's impeachable, then Karl Rove gets to go to jail and Ronald Reagan's advisors get to go to jail because they both went on the record saying that they had offered jobs to get people out of campaigns while they were in government service.
Right.
So Dick Morris should actually use the Google before sending people to his website.
Wasn't Dick Morris offered a job? in the administration? Is that
yes,
no,
I think
he was paying for people to... Okay. Yeah, I think he was paying people outside of his job within the administration of Clinton.
That's right.
Boy, honestly, I think the most entertaining part of that soundbite, though, is they just admitted that outing a CIA agent
right.
during wartime is an impeachable defense. Huh? Wait a minute. Can we go back now?
It's too late to do anything about it. I think it's a terrible idea.
Do you really want that time machine?
No.
What if it breaks?
Carl Frisch from Media Matters for America. See you next week, sir.
Have a good one.
How are you, too? There he goes. He's Frisch. Okay. Let's go to Betsy in Minneapolis on the oil spill. Hey, Bets.
Hi, Mukes. I just gotta say, cops kill
they're
me
not
now.
Made of mucus. They're mooks.
Yeah,
all right,
no,
go ahead.
No, they're not mucus. They're mooks. Cop kill me now because this has never been tried, and now they're gonna try something 5,000 feet that they've been successful on land with.
Right.
I thought the whole problem was that it was 5,000.
Yeah, there's a lot of things on you can do on land that you can't do underwater.
Right. I thought there was such pressure down there that a lot of things don't work right down there. But if there is so much pressure, why don't they crimp that line? They got all that pressure going for them.
Crimp? What does crimp mean?
Like a crimping iron?
It looks like a tube. So somehow crimp it. Put something heavy on it.
Okay, thank you. All right. Thank you, Betsy.
Drop an
animal
on
the steps. A nation of Schneiders.
Yes.
What you do there, you...
You crimp it.
Drop
Except
something on that.
Apparently, the pressure from the oil and gas coming up is already eroding the pipes. So
right.
crimping it in one place isn't probably going to help.
Everybody's we're just spitballing here.
Drop
we're a nation just spitballing around the water cooler.
Drop an anvil on it.
Exactly. Let's go back to the Roadrunner cartoon that this started with.
Yeah, the Absolutely. Portable hole.
Yes, put someone on rocket skates to get down there with it. Exactly.
Aquaman on rocket skates.
Thank you. With exploding birdseed to put in the... Okay. 17 minutes after the hour.
Oh,
this
boy.
Is starting to wear on me.
Yeah.
Back with the latest on the oil spills. We continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Holy cow! You just blew my mind!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed, I'm your hell, I'm your dream. I'm nothing in between, you know you wouldn't want it any other way.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 22 minutes after the hour. Here's now is Thad, the Coast Guard guy. He's the Coast Guard Commandant.
This job will be needed for a long, long time because of the natural resource damage assessments and the cleanup that will be going on.
So who is it? The president of one of the parishes there in Louisiana?
Plaquemines Parish.
What's that?
Plaquemines Parish, I believe.
Sure. Like I was going to attempt that. He said, I'm a big Republican, but the president spent 2 hours with me and really impressed me. He really seems to care, but I don't think he's getting good advice. I don't think they're telling the truth about what's going on around here. He needs to get more personally involved, is what he said. Is General Honore's suggestions, like I was speaking to the congressman about. He talks about getting money from BP immediately. He said the money can go to a trust fund and we can draw from that until we fix this problem. Now I think we need to have them start paying up front for the potential loss, and we need to start drawing that money down now and don't wait for BP to decide when they're going to start paying. I agree. I was talking about this oil industry expert. He said we as a country have not put in place a system for regulating or responding to complex and costlier frontier drilling. The Obama administration simply does not have at its disposal the kind of expertise and equipment to cap the well. You know, so they're talking about basically having a fleet, a government fleet that could respond to this kind of thing. I like the idea of not drilling there.
Sure.
So there doesn't have to be this kind of cleanup again. The president will answer questions tomorrow at the first presidential news conference Obama has given in months. Yes.
Yeah, we have Mike Papantonio coming up next hour.
Yes.
Don't know that you're going to like what he has to say about President Obama and the oil.
Oh, well,
disaster.
Maybe I'll cancel him now.
What? Hey!
Oh, my kid. Come on.
No,
Let's go to...
He's saying that Obama could have done a better job in response.
All right. Well, we'll get into all that, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Michael in Massachusetts, you can take a brief pause from your own naysaying then, can't you?
Yes, I can.
Mm-hmm. Michael in Massachusetts, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Mike.
Hello. I love the 1950s science video, or reel, but my question is, why do you report the Dow values, since those are time-specific?
That's right, Stephanie.
And we should be thinking about the long-term economy, not just the short-term economy.
Well, look at you, you with your gotcha questions, you betcha, by golly.
What do you mean,
you in the lamestream media. That's true.
That
why
true.
Am I doing the Dow?
I have no idea.
The Dow can be entirely different by the time you hear what I'm when I'm saying it. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm your information slot. I'm just trying to give you information.
Well, and also, you know, we run the show on weekends, you know, as a best of show, and so the Dow really doesn't apply then either.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Let's go to Heather in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
A question that I don't think a lot of people actually ask. Considering that the oil spill is in the middle of the Gulf, what would it do to Mexico's economy? I haven't heard Mexico say anything about the spill, even though it's going to hit the loop current. I mean, that's a big major part of their economy is tourism.
Well, the loop current is going to take the oil nowhere near Mexico.
It's going north, isn't it? The
loop current? It's going north. Mexico is to the south of the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, it's fortunately their economy is doing fine, and so they don't need to come here for jobs already. So,
well,
we should have sent an entire as many people as was in the Peloponnesian army to the border, huh? Oh, crappy! Nothing's ever good enough for you, is it, Senator John McCain? Yesterday, he just.
I appreciate the additional 1,200 being sent. Of the Guard, as well as additional $500 million, but it's simply not enough. We need 6,000. We need 3,000 across the border, and additional 3,000 National Guard troops to the Arizona-Mexico border.
Yes, and we need to finish a dang fence, and we need to look. I've got a little war game going here. You need some more bayonet guys and laying down guys shooting in the, yeah.
And melted with magnifying glass guys.
You shot my battleship.
Oh, making fun of Grampy never goes out of style,
no,
does it?
Uh-uh.
I miss the campaign. Jeff in Orange County. Hey, Jeff.
Hi. I got three quick interrelated points here to make. Hopefully I have time for each. And just to John McCain, where is Bin Laden? You said you knew where he was. I guess we're all hostage to you winning an election.
Yeah, that's kind of treason-y. If he knows where he is, he's still not telling us.
Yeah,
and you know
sure
what? You know what we have to do for him to tell us? We need to finish the dang fence, and then he'll tell us.
Very good, very good. Just three points regarding the oil spill real quickly, and they're all interrelated, is that everybody who's ever spilled cooking oil on the stove in the kitchen and knows that the first thing you do to clean it up effectively isn't to disperse it around the rest of the kitchen.
Right.
Much easier to clean up when it's everywhere else and harder to detect. The next one is I'll use an oil company, and I won't say which one specifically, is recent commercials where they talk about drilling a certain shelf off of one of our coasts, and mm-hmm. if they tap this oil plume, they'll be able to fuel these 10,000 homes for the next 10 years. Yes, but instead, if you did it the right way via a green technology like, say, solar, wind, or hydro, you'd be able to fuel those same 10,000 homes forever.
Right.
And in addition to that, because I've started to hear people talk about is nuclear an alternative?
Yeesh.
You know, it's cleaner. Three Mile Island and Chernobyl.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
At all.
Yeah.
I think
mm-hmm.
I should say it all. Have a great mm-hmm. morning, guys.
Thank you, honey. Yeah, I grew up near Three Mile Island, Jim, and you know, because when you've comforted me and patted all the humps on my back, you know what I'm talking about.
And you hugged him with your three arms.
Right, the unibrow is covering up at the third eye. That's what that was all about.
Uh-huh. Jim told me he could help me with that hump, but he hasn't. I don't know. I asked, but no. 29 minutes
perhaps
after
I could help you with that hump. What hump?
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
The kids know you drink.
It is the...
Shut up.
Yappy little germ wagons.
What's your point?
34 minutes
mama's
after
medicine.
The hour.
Go get mama's in my medicine.
1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. David Mattingly, CNN political reporter extraordinaire. By the way, he's been covering this.
CNN national correspondent.
National correspondent has been covering this top kill. And, here he is, live. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Listen, I know you have some fancy awards in environmental reporting and whatever, but this story... This has got to be, you know, people sort of throw out, oh, this is the biggest environmental disaster ever. But, I mean, that really might not be hyperbole, right?
Probably not. We don't have any hard data to tell us exactly what we're measuring here because it's just so darn big. I mean, this whole thing's been an experiment from the very beginning. The Gulf of Mexico is one big lab experiment right now with all the chemicals, dispersants they're putting in, and then the oil. We don't know what the long-term effects are going to be.
David, since you brought that up, the dispersants, you know, my co-host here, Jim Ward, has talked about the fact that, you know, that really, in some ways, is just to hide how big the spill really is. What are dispersants supposed to do, and do they actually do anything good?
Well, this was a strategic decision that they thought that they were going to fight this oil in the water and not on the land. They wanted to keep these big, massive oil slicks from creeping up and decimating parts of the shoreline in the Gulf of Mexico. So they made the decision, we're going to throw these dispersants at it. These dispersants have been effective in the past on much smaller spills.
But effective how? That's what I'm trying to understand. What are they supposed to do that's good?
All right. Let's say you have a sink full with grease floating on the top of it. You put some dish detergent in there, and it breaks it all up into smaller pieces. That's essentially what this dispersant does. It breaks that oil up into smaller and smaller pieces. It falls down through the water column. It settles into the environment. And I keep hearing this story about how the Gulf of Mexico has a rich microbial environment. These microbes dine on petroleum. So if it's as good an environment as they say they are, then these microbes are going to be feasting like they never have before in their lives. But the question
I'm still not understanding why what it does that's good, though. What is a dispersant supposed to do? Like, why? Do you know what I'm saying? It somehow doesn't make logical sense to me why you do that.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, there's a portion of this that doesn't make logical sense. Those hydrocarbons stay in the environment. It just breaks it up into smaller pieces where you can't see the oil slick anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Jim is saying, that it's to hide how big the spill is. It doesn't really do anything. And as you say, it may be doing something worse, right?
Well, it's not necessarily to hide the spill. It was a strategic decision to keep this spill from coming ashore and decimating the shoreline.
Okay.
So it's supposed to stop it from coming ashore. Okay, but obviously it hasn't in this case, right? The dispersant has not stopped it from coming ashore.
It has come ashore mostly in the form of a sheen, which has been very manageable to go in with shovels and pick up off the beach and dispose of that way.
Hmm. Okay.
There's been a couple of places in Louisiana where we've seen patches of that really heavy crude come in. But again, these are patches. The fact that they got through the booms and everything was disturbing.
Yes.
But, again, we did not see large portions of shoreline, miles and miles of it, just absolutely getting slogged with this heavy crude, which was the alternative to not using the dispersants.
Okay.
Okay.
I see.
Okay. So, now, tell us the progress of the top kill. What's happening as we speak?
Okay, this morning at dawn was supposed to be the time that BP thought they'd be able to roll out this top kill. I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks now. Well, dawn comes, and then Tony Hayward, the CEO, comes on our air on CNN this morning, and he says, well, we continue to run our diagnostics overnight, and we're going to sit down sometime through the course of the day and make a decision about whether or not we can actually do the top kill.
Nice.
So we are still waiting to find out if they can do it and then when they're going to try and pull this off.
Obviously, we don't have a lot of confidence thus far in that clearly the test they did on the well previously, right, it did not work, and that's why it blew in the first place. Right, the diagnostic test they were doing originally?
Right. That's the part of the memos we've been seeing coming out of Congress and the BP's own investigation into this so far. And all along, BP has been saying we don't want to make the mistake of making this any worse than it already is. I mean, a lot of the delay has been trying to make sure that that blowout preventer, that big five-story piece of machinery that they have sitting on top of the well, that machine that failed to stop this spill, they're trying to make sure that it can take the top kill when they start flooding that well with all this drilling mud to under high pressure. They needed to make sure that if it was broken, they needed to fix it. They've had to rebuild portions of it underwater. They've had to run extensive tests to make sure it could handle the pressure. And that's what they're trying to crunch right now, idea with all the data that they've been assimilating to that.
So, David, at this hour, we are really not even sure they can do the top kill. I mean, you know, not only are they saying they don't know if this could work at this depth, they don't even know if they're going to do it yet, is what you're saying.
They have all along said, well, they've been, even lately, they've been rolling back expectations, saying that, 60 to 70% is the best chance we can offer at this point. The top kill has been tried successfully, but it has also failed on land in shallower water, and they've never tried it at this depth before. So it's just all an unknown experiment. Engineering that they have to do for this is something new that they've never tried before. And for all of us who have been watching this minute by minute and hour by hour, it's clear that the only way BP can possibly redeem itself in any way is to make this work, because all the options that they have after the top kill are going to be more problematic and more difficult. The blossom won't be as effective at stopping the oil. So this is their best shot. If the top kill doesn't work, it's just going to get harder from here.
So, though that's the thing. So what's next? The junk shot? We keep hearing all these terms. Is that what, if they can't do the top kill or it doesn't work, is that what's the next idea? Is that what we're talking about?
What Tony Hayward was telling us this morning and what other executives are telling us is that the best chance they have to, or the best plan that they have to roll out if the top kill is a no-go or if the top kill doesn't work, they're going to, well, all the oil is coming out of the top of that pipe that comes out of the top of the blowout preventer. Mm-hmm. They're going to shear that pipe off and set another device on there with a seal and everything like that where they hope to capture most of the escaping oil. That's their plan B.
David, you know, you hear so much, you know, particularly when there's something as emotional and frustrating as this, you hear so much stuff out there. It's hard to, you know, I'm trying to separate what's true and what's not. I know some people have said, oh, they're trying to save the well. That's why they're not, you know, some people have suggested blowing it up, but that might make it worse, but it would close it down forever. Is BP trying to save the well or save the oil? Or is that have anything to do with this delay in capping this or no?
Weeks ago when I first asked that question, I was told absolutely not. We are trying to cap this well permanently and shut this off. We are not trying to save that well. And that answer hasn't changed.
You were told that by BP?
Yes.
That's the problem is, you know, I mean, you look at this testimony before Congress, David, and they unequivocally said, we have the technology for this not to happen, or if it does, we got it. Well, you know, clearly that was just an out-and-out lie, wasn't it?
It wasn't just BP. They might have believed this. I don't know. It's not just BP. It's the entire oil industry. They're all drilling at deep water. They're all relying on these blowout preventers. Before this, they were all saying, there's no way this disaster is going to happen. And yet it did. And actually, BP has called in a lot of experts from their competitors. I mean, this has been an industry-wide effort to see how they can fix this to make sure, first of all, to make sure it doesn't happen again, and second of all, how do we fix it if it does happen again?
We haven't seen such a arrogance since Titanic, have we? This is the ship God himself couldn't sink. So, you know, David, again, one of the things I've heard thrown out is that they have a thing called an acoustic switch in other countries. that could have prevented this? What do you know about that? And then I've heard other people say that wouldn't have helped in this situation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm being told, too. I mean, this is sort of like a remote cutoff switch. If all else fails on deck, I mean, when you have all, you can't shut off the blowout preventer from the platform. They say that in other countries they have these remote cutoff switches. Well, they don't have them here in the United States. They're not required. And we keep asking that question, would this have made a difference? And BP's answer and some other experts we've talked to in a speculative role are saying that probably that would not have helped with this type of disaster. There was a series of mistakes that happened with the mechanics and the decision-making on board that platform that led to this disaster. A remote cutoff switch would have been too little too late is what we're being told.
Wow. Can I just say this whole story gives me a headache in my eye. It's so beyond my technical expertise, and apparently everybody else's too.
Well, it's also frustrating to watch because we're watching a slow-motion disaster happen before our eyes. And, you know, we're kind of helpless.
That's right.
And we're kind of helpless to do anything about it.
And that's a terrible thing for everybody who lives here on the Gulf Coast. Every single one of these communities is used to dealing with disaster. They're hit with hurricanes all the time. They get knocked down. They stand back up. They know the hurricane's going to pass, and they can put their lives back together. This is one storm that nobody knows when it's going to be over and how badly. This fishing season, probably a wash for a lot of fishermen. This tourist season, probably not nearly up to par, no matter what they do with advertising throughout the Gulf Coast. How long is that going to happen? How many people are going to go out of business? How many people are going to be able to weather this storm? Those are so many questions we can't answer right now.
Yep. David, before you go, you know, since you've been on this story since early morning, do you have a sense, is this going to happen? If so, what kind of time frame today or not?
Well, the only encouraging thing that Tony Hayward said to us this morning was that it seems to be going okay so far, but he didn't have all the data, and he had to talk with his team of experts to get a decision before they go. I mean, they're clearly at this point, there's so much pressure on them, they don't want to commit to something they can't deliver. And again, the only way that BP is going to even try to redeem itself in the public eye is to shut this well down. And at this point, they can't say, yes, we're definitely going to do that. They're not saying that.
Yep. David Mattingly from CNN, thanks so much for your time on such a busy day. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. There he goes, David Mattingly, personal CNN reporter.
What if he's related to Ken Mattingly, the astronaut who didn't make it on Apollo 13, which is a near disaster.
Wow, Jim.
Yeah, I think at this point, Jim, Tony, what's his name, Hayworth, has realized that he is not Hugh Grant, and the English accent has lost its charm for us, and he's just shut up.
I don't think it's working, my charm offensive. I'm about as beloved as Simon Cowell at this point, which is to say, not at all.
47 minutes.
Well, then.
Yeah, we need to bring in Simon Cowell to commentate on this
that
top kill.
That is the worst top kill attempt I have ever seen.
Just being honest.
It was a little pitchy. 47 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
A whole new level of disturbing.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Pardon me, I was very busy. I was emailing my landlady about the mice that I...
Oh, really?
You mean the rats?
...discovered last night. Yeah,
baby,
I'm thinking...
Baby rats.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're a little big. Okay. And I've discovered that my dogs are completely useless in every way. Fred was too scared to even come upstairs. Max sort of peeked his head in. He's like, what? Okay.
Wow.
I was trying to get them to defend me in some way, something. Mm. All right.
Your dogs are special.
And the rats are very thankful for the free food.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear God. Life in Calcutta. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Carol Browner, Obama Energy and Climate Advisor yesterday.
Obviously, he's frustrated as the rest of the people are, and particularly the people along the coast. We want this thing shut down.
To talk about decisions about the cleanup and shutdown.
All decisions about cleanup, all decisions about shutting down the well are being run through the federal government. The federal government is in charge.
Guess what else BP is doing? They're taking out full-page ads in newspapers defending their spill response. They're taking time and money to do that. Isn't that nice?
Mm.
Yeah. They have have placed full-page ads.
Beyond petroleum, shall we? Beyond petroleum. Don't look at the petroleum. Look at the windmills. We like those.
They have full-page ads in the Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today defending their response to the oil spill. Their ads come as a new poll finds 76% of the American public disapproves of how the company is handling the spill.
Sure, they should spend all their money on damage control, not actually controlling
exactly.
The damage.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, look at the pretty colors in the USA Today ad. Oh, okay.
They're just as pretty as the sheen on the Gulf of Mexico surface. Mm.
Dewan in Detroit, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Stephanie Loops? I have the idea for the way to at least get them to collect all 100% of the oil instead of this measly percentage they're collecting right now. Basically, what they can do, just like they drilled the hole in the first place, drill the whole tap, and it'll basically put in screw wedges inside the pipe so that, and make it hollow so that they can continue to drain the oil as the tap goes deeper in there to make a tight seal.
Okay. Anyway, everyone is Manny, Moe, and Jack at this particular.
What you want to do is get a widget and screw it on there tight with a spanner and yeah, well, what they should have done.
That like sounds like every guy I've ever talked to about what's wrong with my car.
Mm-hmm.
I glaze over about the. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, your master cylinder's not connecting to the defibrillator.
So the fly rod
cap shaft thing.
Okay. All right. Did anybody have any idea what he just was talking about?
I think he was talking about taking a zip tie down there and
kind of
yeah. Just shutting it off with that.
What did the last lady say? What cat? Put something heavy on it.
Yeah, an anvil.
Just put a crimp in there.
Just put a crimp. Do a something. Right, a twist tie or something.
A crimping iron. A curling iron.
Crimp the tube and everything's fine.
Victor in St. Paul, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Vic.
Yeah, I think this is certainly going to affect the economy. BP, and definitely going to have to lay off a senator and two congressmen.
Ah.
Did you ever think, nobody's ever thought about this, and I'm going to pose these questions to you and your audience can contemplate them, and this is a ruse started by BP and all the other oil giants the minute Barack Obama got in as a Democratic nominee. This ruse, this thing was planned 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Let's follow the paper trail. I'll give you an example. Here's the question. Does these oil giants ever consider their environment? No. So it stands to reason that, therefore, they will be more likely to start this well, knowing that they couldn't cap it, and knowing that this will be political assassination for Barack Obama.
Oh.
I kind of doubt that.
I don't think so. I thought that's where he was going with that.
If not trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
To try to clean it out.
They just did this to make him look bad. Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Listen, sir, when you have a conspiracy theory that Jim Ward cannot get down with, you know that you've really, that was a junk shot, wasn't it, conspiratorially?
Yeah, that was a junk shot.
Conspiratorial junk shot, yeah.
Exactly. Ray in Phoenix, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Ray.
How you doing?
Good.
All right. Now, I'm not a political geek, but I do know in November of 2009, there was the Monterey oil spill, Montaray.
Mm-hmm.
Blowout preventer went out. It leaked for 2 months, leaked 9 million gallons, and nobody has spoken about that at all. It was the exact same thing, and nobody has spoken about that.
In Australia, yeah, I don't know. I didn't.
Yes, I think.
It's, look it up. It's in Sydney, Australia. It's off the Kimberley coast.
Right. And Blackwater was involved with that too.
Yes. That was the... And nobody has brought that up at all.
Hmm. Interesting.
I just wanted to let you know. I love the show, but I got to go to work.
Okay. Oh, well, thanks. He'll take no further questions. You have to go to work. What are you slowing him down like that for?
That was the through line between these two disasters. Blackwater was involved with cementing in both of these incidents.
Halliburton did the cementing in this
Halliburton,
one.
Halliburton, I meant. That's what I meant. Same. But, you know,
did he mean Blackwater or did he mean Halliburton? He meant Halliburton.
Yeah, I don't think Blackwater has anything to do with oil drilling.
This whole show has become a junk shot. 58 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lloyd, voice of deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Hump Days with Hal has been moved to tomorrow.
That's right.
Huh? Is that allowed?
If you were a friend of the Stephanie Miller Show on Facebook, you would have already known that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yes, become a friend of the Stephanie Miller Show.
And then Hal, of course, will be my date for Melissa Etheridge's birthday party in Los Angeles Saturday night. How fun is that? He'll be his job to make me, you know, shove my front teeth back in my mouth. Because you know how I get, Chris. You've seen me around celebrities.
Remember that time you did that song with somebody giving me some water? That was awesome.
It's going to be bad, Jim. I'm looking at the Evite. Meg Ryan's going to be there. I'm going to totally make an idiot of myself. I can already see it, feel it coming.
Remember that time you and Billy Crystal were like watching TV, but you were in the same room? That was awesome.
Remember, and then you did the thing. Remember the fake orgasm? Probably no one's ever mentioned that one, too. That seems great in the diner.
I have what she's having. That's like great. Awesome.
All right. Also, by the way, Face the Grayson is tomorrow with Congressman Alan Grayson and Edie McClurg live in studio with the Mooks in L.A. Tomorrow.
So we better watch our language here in the studio. When the microphones are off.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because she said the F word in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's
very,
true.
Very famously. So
it'll be a big, big show tomorrow. All right. So now we finally get to understand exactly how much money bejesus is, because Mike Papantonio is going to be suing the bejesus out of BP, and we'll find out what the dollar amount of that is. Good morning, Mike Papantonio of the Ring of Fire.
You're going to be the biggest celebrity tomorrow night, I can assure you.
Yeah, right. I'll be the radio geek in the corner. So, Mike, I've been seeing you all over the TV, for heaven's sakes.
A lot of stuff to talk about. I'm telling you, every day there's a new story. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, after handling tobacco and asbestos and virtually, you know, a lot of pharmaceutical cases, you think, you know, I've seen the worst documents. You say, you know, I don't think I can look at a document that's worse than this one that I have in my hand. But I think last week I saw one that was just over the top. What I call the Three Little Pigs document. Have you seen this yet?
Mm-mm.
Three Little Pigs document is around petroleum refineries. There's an area where they house refinery workers. In 2005, they had one of the biggest refinery explosions in America. It took place in Texas. And the issue came down to the document is they actually have pictures, a little drawings of three pigs at the top of the document. And what they're trying to figure out is where do you put the three little pigs? If you house them around the explosion area, what they call the wave area, do you put these workers in steel and concrete houses, or do you put them in mobile homes? Well, the Three Little Pig document goes through and it analyzes how many pigs we're going to lose if an explosion goes off, and they determine that we're going to pay less than $10 million per pig, therefore we're going to go ahead and go with mobile homes around the wave area, the explosion area, rather than steel and concrete.
Oh my God.
And they decided to put these people, 15 of them were killed, 170 70 were injured. That is the company we're dealing with here. Wow. That's the caliber of character that we're dealing with. Now, I got to tell you something. I'm a cynical kind of guy because I've been handling these cases a long time, and I've seen really ugly documents. I've seen all the tobacco documents where they talk about how much it costs to kill a child. But when I saw this, and they had the three pigs drawn up on top of the document, and they're trying to say, do we save money by putting the three little pigs in motorhomes, mobile homes? And they conclude they do.
Wow.
Mike, you know, we've obviously, there's so much stuff out there. A lot of people saw the 60 Minutes case where, I mean, or story, excuse me, where, I mean, it seems pretty clear, you know, if that is all accurate, that, you know, BP basically said, get the oil out faster, screw the way you think you ought to, and this is what led to this. Is that
That's correct, Stephanie. The report was excellent. We know the witnesses. We know all the players. The report was excellent. It came down to this. They could save about $400,000 by doing what they call an early withdrawal. That's where they pull out the mud that's supposed to hold, to keep pressure. You have incredible pressure coming from 5,000 feet. So they pull out the mud, and then they put a cement plug in. Well, they pulled it out too soon against the advice of everybody on the rig. There was a big argument that took place on the rig. They said, no, don't do that. And the reason they didn't want to do that is because all the engineers calculated that if they do, exactly what would happen did happen. And so it was all about saving money. They were going to have a celebration, Stephanie. This is what's incredible. They were going to have a celebration on the rig, and they had to get all this underway. They had to, in order to get the celebration, they had to be at a certain point as far as where the job was, close to finish. And so it was all about some cat saying, yeah, you know, we're going to do this. He overrode everybody's decisions and did it anyway. So, but everybody has a hand in this thing. They knew that this thing was failing 2 weeks before. They could see the parts that were supposed to hold everything together floating up from the bottom. This blowout preventer that everybody's talking about like it's some kind of damn spaceship or something, like some great invention, they actually knew that they had not tested it. They knew that when they tested 14 of them, that only two of them worked, two out of 14. And this is what they were supposed to protect these workers and the American public and this entire Gulf Coast ecosystem with.
You know, Mike, I'm not an attorney, but boy, Senator Boxer, among others, you know, this criminal inquiry seems like a slam dunk to me. It seems like, you know, you talk about incriminating documents. I mean, they told Congress, we've got the technology, we know how to do this at this depth, and if anything happens, we know how to fix it. Just bald-faced lie, right?
Well, it's worse than that. Look, for Eric Holder not to be out front on this is part of the problem. That's the PR problem that Obama's having right now. Eric Holder should be on TV every day saying, the documents I'm looking at are appalling. Because I got to tell you something, the documents that I'm looking at are appalling. Look, I used to prosecute, and I can tell you something. There is enough to put a hell of a criminal case together against these people. People should already be perp walked on this thing.
Mike, why aren't they, you know, a couple of suggestions have come out. First of all, why aren't they fining them per day, right now? Get this capped or you know what I mean? It just doesn't there need to be some kind of gun to their head.
There is. Let me tell you, Stephanie, if they would put that gun to their head, and there's a lot of ways they can do it. I mean, the fine per day is what FDR would have done. It's what Teddy Roosevelt did to the mining industry when they, you know, during the mining wars. This guy, Obama has all kinds of tools at his disposal.
Well, General Honoré talked about, you know, that BP ought to be paying right now. They ought to have, you know, the funds right now in a trust fund, like, so that the claims are paid out right now. You know, you're a lawyer. You know how long this can take, right?
Oh, my God. You know, Exxon took 22 years. It's still not over. Well, already what we see them – watch this story. You heard it here first. Watch this story. There is this huge effort to push everything to Texas because and analyze why that is. Well, here, let me give you some reasons. First of all, most of the federal judges over there in Texas have been appointed by Bush 1 and Bush 2. Second of all, it is considered a hellhole for anybody who has a claim. On the state court level, Stephanie, if a person wins a claim, if somebody who's injured or killed or their child is, you know, whatever, however bad it is, they win in court. That claimant on the state court appellate level loses 92% of the time. The home headquarters for this company is all in Houston. If you take oil away from Houston, you've got a damn tumbleweed town. And yeah. So what the big push is now, they want everything to happen in Houston, and that's what you're going to see day after day. You're going to hear Houston, Houston, Houston. The truth is there are very few cases in Houston. Most of the in Texas at all, most of the cases are in Louisiana and Florida. So, I mean, Louisiana is obviously the natural place for where this case ought to take place. And at some time in July, you're going to have a panel of judges, and they're going to determine where the case should be. What you're seeing in Texas is you're seeing all these defendants get together, go to the judge, say, "Judge, we want you to hear this case. We want it to be in our backyard." And it's called homegrown forum shopping. It's where they look, they say, who's the best judge for us? What's the best state for us? Where can we have the best chance to win? And they've determined that that's Texas for a lot of obvious reasons. I mean, my God, part of this case is going to be me talking about Dick Cheney and George Bush and how they dropped the ball and how they allowed all this to happen. Now, a judge has to determine how much of that I can talk about. So they want to be in front of a favorable judge. They certainly want to be in front of a judge that Bush appointed.
Mike, explain how you're involved in this and what you're suing BP on behalf of who and what's tell us what you know the
well,
actual
it's, yeah BP Halliburton Transocean all these defendants on behalf of right now two different things on behalf of claimants who have lost you know they've been in the shrimping business, they've been in the oyster business, they're commercial fishermen for generations, and these people don't have an income. That's the first part of it. The second part is the environmental issue. The fact is you have an environment that's been completely, just decimated.
Right.
I don't know if there's enough money to put it back together, Stephanie. I don't overstate that a bit. So those are the two different things we're suing for. What will happen is the team, in a case like this, you have lawyers get together that have experience, and they put together teams. And I think the team we have coming together on this one's a good one.
Who's on the team besides you, Mike?
You've got Scott Bickford out of Louisiana, Russ Herman. My God, Mark Lanier out of Texas. You got a whole crew of us that every day we're trying to figure out how do you go forward with this case. And Calvin Fayard. These are all people that, you know, we worked with some of these guys just several months ago on the New Orleans flood case, Mr. Go case, and we were able to succeed on that. But that took years. We had to take on the Army Corps of Engineers. So this is a crew that's used to the big cases, and I'm satisfied that we're going to be okay with this. You've got
Mike. Mike, let me just, quickly, because obviously, today we're maybe not in the midst of this, the top kill. What is your take on what's happening now and what's going to happen after this?
Well, I'm hoping the top kill works, but I have to listen to the experts. Matthew Simmons, probably one of the best, most knowledgeable people in the world on this topic. He says the only way that this is going to end is when the oil runs out. He says that you're not going to stop the leak. Now, this guy's not some tinfoil hat guy. I mean, this guy worked as a deputy advisor for the Energy Department for George Bush, very right-wing conservative type. And he's out there saying, look, the only way this thing's going to work, the only way we're going to stop this is when it runs out of oil. So, I hope he's wrong, Steph. Now, really, I live here. I want this thing to stop. But I have to be a realist about what's happening here. And you've got such incredible pressure gradients coming up from the bottom of that ocean.
Mike, doesn't this make the case once and for all that we shouldn't be ever drilling?
Never, ever, never, ever, ever, never. We don't need to. Obama, look, his advisors need to get rid of his advisors. You see, Obama is somebody, Stephanie, who does want to pull the sword out of the stone. He wants to. He wants change. He genuinely wants to do the right thing. But he surrounded himself with people like Ken Salazar, mm-hmm. who's advising him on this. I mean, my God, this guy is like an environmentalist nightmare. He's ahead of the interior, for God's sakes. This is the guy who's been in office. He saw what mineral management was up to. He saw how dilatory the mineral management had been. He'd been there, more than a year. He could have made corrections at this point. He could have gone and audited these books and seen that this whole thing's a scam and the way that they get their permits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that shows a lot of this, stuff, the report that just came out, as happened before Obama got in. But, you're right. Unfortunately, with such a huge plate of stuff to fix, that Obama had, unfortunately, it's taken this huge disaster to go, oh, man, that's going to... That's one of them we got to fix right away.
Yeah, and I really hate this argument of blame Obama. You got Bobby Jindal, Haley Barbour, Bob Riley, all these daggum, you know, all these governors from the red states along the coast. Now, they didn't want any government. Oh, my God. This is the teabag Republican, the teabagger Republicans. They didn't want government down here. Well, by God, they want government now. Now they're, the hands are out. They're asking, and they're trying to shift the blame to Obama. These are the guys that let BP do exactly what they wanted to do.
Absolutely.
Guys that wanted deregulations. These red state teabag types, Bobby Jindal, Haley Barbour, Bob Riley, the only governor on the coast that had any sense was Charlie Crist over here in Florida. But the point being, it's come home to roost now.
Yep. Mike, you are terrific. I see why you're booked nearly every minute of every day on television.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. I've got to keep the message out there. I appreciate you letting me talk.
I appreciate it, Mike. You're terrific. Thanks so much for taking time for us. I know you're so busy these days, so we will check back in with you soon.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All right. Bye-bye. There he goes. Mike Papantonio, host of Ring of Fire, everybody. Along with the lovely and talented Bobby Kennedy Jr. and David Bender.
That's
so,
right.
He's fired up.
He was on fire.
Fired up, ready to go. Exactly. And that's why it creates a magical ring of fire when they're on the air together. All right. I believe you can go to Ring of... Is it ringoffire.com to find out?
Ringofireradio.com, and we have a link to it at stephaniemiller.com.
We're something.
I know.
21 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Marie in Atlanta, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Marie.
Hello, Steph.
Hello.
I'm so glad that you had Mike Papp on. He's fabulous.
And me something.
One thing he didn't talk about, though, that I'm not sure that he would agree with me, but I'd be surprised if he didn't. If the Obama administration steps in to try to take over cleanup of the spill, any of the damages at that point stop being assessed against BP and start being assessed against the United States government, meaning you and me, the taxpayer.
Yeah, Marie, that's a good question. You're right. I should have asked him that. I have heard that as well. That, I think you're right. That's what they sort of were saying, weren't they, from day one, is this is BP's responsibility. This is BP's mess,
Exactly. And if I could comment a little bit on what General Honoré is suggesting, actually, I think it's an excellent reason to bring back the windfall profits tax, because you could use that tax to fund a trust fund for cleanup of oil spills in terms of the mining industry, for rescue operations. I mean, we hope that we don't ever need these things again. But again, we don't know whether BP's got that money, and we don't know what they're going to do to try and shift the money away.
I agree. You do not want to let them weasel out of this and have things overturned in God knows years from now. I mean, these people need help now. Bob in Colorado on the spill. Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Good.
The reason why no one wants to talk too much about this, that was the Atlas platform was the one that was off Australia that caught on fire and burned. And the reason why no one wants to mention it or there's so little key on it is because of the fact that it took from November to February for them to stop the blowout. They had to drill cross drill and put relief wells in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why no one's really wanting to look at the prospect of this thing blowing until August or September.
Oh, God.
That's why some oil companies put in the relief wells simultaneously with drilling the original well, rather than waiting for it to blow up. And then,
And we can only hope that hurricanes don't take place during that time, if it takes
right
that long.
Before the relief wells are
my
done.
God.
Yeah, Mike in Tacoma, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Steph. Hey, about the cap to
well that they're talking about, that they're going to cap it and not use it ever again. Mm-hmm. You know, BP has mentioned that. You know, they're just dragging their feet to drill the other well, because each of those drills, each of those is a separate well. So all they have to do is cap the original one after they get the pressure relief well drilled, and they've got the second well that they can start using and continue draining the oil out of. You know, that's what they're doing. And
well, that's what I asked the CNN reporter that earlier, and Chris, that's what I was confused about. I mean, a relief well is still a well,
yes,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. So it isn't.
But
they're not capping the well for good,
right? But they can have the necessary machinery on it to, you know, turn it off if they want to. You know,
it relieves the pressure.
Hey, right.
They've got another platform there with 15 wells. The I don't remember the name of it, but are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anyway, another point.
Sorry, we're out. Yeah. Now we're out of time. But I was still here.
Yes.
And that would have afforded you the time. But now we're out of time. I'm still here. 29 minutes after the hour, and I'll be here again right after the break on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You look like you should be holding up round cards at a dogfight in Fresno.
God.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. Dave in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say that, you know, using good old American know-how, we can turn this adversity in the Gulf into an opportunity. Just recall the troops. Have them take, especially a bunch of C-130s and the Army Corps engineers, dump dirt all over the oil slick. You can build a land bridge. Then you can build roads, which will create jobs. Mm-hmm. And everyone can drive down, make nice with Hugo Chavez, solve that problem. Mm-hmm. And in a couple of hundred years, BP can drill there, creating energy and for future generations. You know, think of the children. Obama will be a hero. And as far as seafood, everyone knows that food comes from Walmart.
Mm. All right, that was
okay. That was quite the sketch.
That was a little comedy jambalaya there.
I suppose. Was that comedy or was he serious?
Something. Don't really. Well, that's the best kind of comedy, isn't it? It's really hard to identify.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
What political stance it was taking.
I'm confused.
My head hurts.
It had neither a point of view nor
but
jokes.
Did mention C-130s in it, so kudos
yes.
for that. Okay.
All right. Then, you know, by the way, Steny Hoyer said the same thing Mike Papantonio was saying about Bobby Jindal and these guys. He said he shouldn't be wringing his hands over the federal response in Louisiana because he said he has been part of the drill baby drill crowd. And it's true. It's like the whole keep the government away. Ah, wow, where's the government now? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. In the meanwhile, we were talking about the Arizona immigration law. By the way, so the Mexican president, you know, the right wing went berserk over him mentioning the Arizona law.
Mm-hmm.
He's meddling in U.S. politics. And he is not the first international figure, by the way, to voice his concerns over the law. In fact, he joins a loud chorus of global leaders who have criticized the draconian law. South African Nobel Peace Prize winner Desmond Tutu made an interesting point. He said abominations such as apartheid do not start with an entire population suddenly becoming inhumane. They start here. They start with generalizing unwanted characteristics across an entire segment of a population. And I think that's a good point. But since when don't have a right to comment on anything about our country? We comment on things in other countries all the time. The right wing, how quickly do they French bash
right,
or
right.
Europe bash over anything, right? Mm-hmm. Any issue. Senator John Kyle talking about the immigration debate.
Senator McCain made the point that it was not helpful to the debate to have the Arizona law mischaracterized.
Yes. They don't go on to say how he mischaracterized it. Exactly.
In that it was talked about by a Mexican dude. That's how it was mischaracterized.
Apparently.
Yeah.
He was brown. Senator John Cornyn yesterday.
As we discuss the issue of immigration reform, which we all agree is a very important issue, we need to talk about credible immigration reform.
Yes, or another C word, comprehensive, might also be a good idea.
He means fixing the damn fence. Finish the dang fence. You whippersnappers.
Senator Sean Cornyn
again. Lawn and fix the dang fence.
The President of the United States came to speak to Republicans at lunch. We talked about a lot of issues, including immigration reform and the like. Subsequent to that meeting, we were informed by email that the President has made a major announcement with regard to the deployment of National Guard along the border.
Yeah, by the by, so the president is planning to spend or send as many as 1,200 National Guard troops to the border amid growing concern about cross-border criminal activity, yada, yada. You know, all of this, it's such a load of crap, isn't it? If you look at the actual numbers, Obama has deported and arrested more people than George Bush did. So, you know, it's like, and yet, this is just one element of comprehensive immigration reform. You can't, that's the problem, you can't do just one thing. John McCain, of course, immediately said the move was lackluster, that he needs five times the president's commitment of troops. And as you said, Jim, the dang fence. He really is like an old man, like a kid has like broken his fence with his mini bike, and you need to fix a dang fence and get off my lawn.
We need a million times infinity soldiers on the border. No, a gazillion times infinity.
You know how many troops John McCain thinks we need? However many will help him beat J.D. Hayworth. That's how many. I don't know if there are enough. All right. Representative Gabrielle Giffords, Democrat of Arizona.
We need to stay one step ahead. And by having the military, with their experience in Iraq and Afghanistan, with the reconnaissance, the intelligence, the surveillance, having that group, that manpower on our border to help figure out how we stay two steps ahead of the drug traffickers is going to be absolutely imperative.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting idea. Get out of Afghanistan and move everyone to the border.
So President Obama had this lunch yesterday, right, with behind closed doors with Republicans. Ugh, eating with Grampy McCain. Ugh, gumming his food and
how come
yelling at you all cranky.
How come Obama never goes to have lunch with the Democrats? It's always, yeah. He always goes to have lunch with the Republicans.
I know. I think, you know what I just watched on TV the other night? Talladega Nights, the Will Ferrell movie. Mm-hmm. I think that having lunch with John McCain would be like that grandfather character. The grandfather in Talladega Nights.
Never saw it. No. I try and stay away from Will Ferrell movies, actually.
It's a cranky old guy just gumming his food. That's what I see.
Elf was
like.
Pretty good.
They squared off over the number of troops and yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. Okay. By the by, I was looking at this, the FBI report. You know, we've been saying this. Seems like things are uglier out here than usual, and they've detailed the surge in death threats against lawmakers. Did you read this story?
Mm-hmm.
What have we come to in this country? It's just not even like, you know, a few isolated ones. It's just like Heath Shuler, the Democratic representative, the caller on his voicemail said, I voted for you. If you vote for that stimulus package, I'm going to kill you. Simple as that. In February 2009, one man left voicemail messages for Debbie Stabenow, our fine senator from Michigan, that said, we're going to get you. We're going to get you with a lot of bolt action, just like we did RFK, like we did MLK. We know who we are. Who you are. We'll get you.
Wow.
The FBI traced the calls to a 54-year-old Texas man who lives alone, who at one time owned a 20-gun arsenal of handguns, shotguns, and rifles. According to the documents, he told officers he was really, really drunk when he made the calls. Mm. He said he was just venting. Check this out. Taking out his frustrations after hearing a discussion of the Fairness Doctrine and becoming concerned that the government would attempt to abolish the radio shows of Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. And you know why he thought that, Jim? Because that's what Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh say on their radio shows.
Well, he just confessed to killing Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King, the right-wing racist crowd. So thanks for
in a completely unrelated story to the right-wing racist card, Rand Paul, by the way, conservatives, including Rand Paul, disagree with Sarah Palin's claim that Maddow asked a gotcha question. Sarah Palin, invoking her own perceived victimhood, of course, said that NBC's Rachel Maddow attacked him with a prejudiced gotcha question. You bet. Conservatives like John Cornyn and who's the other one? Oh, Rand Paul don't agree with her. Said it really wasn't the interview so much that was unfair. The interview, I think, was fair.
It's just that his.
Oh, and another one of Sarah Palin's Tea Party endorsement candidates lost yesterday. Did you see that?
Imploded.
How's that
drilly,
shilly thing working out for you?
Oh, I don't know which one, but another. But it was someone in a primary. And
is this the one that plagiarized President Obama's speech?
Ooh,
is, or the other one?
I don't know.
There's someone that got caught in a fair. Wait a minute. Hang on. I wasn't ready for this.
Oh,
yet.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Oh, that's all right.
Drop this and run.
Exactly. Wait, I don't know which one it is. There's one, what do you call it? Somebody got caught in an affair already. One of Sarah Palin's
yeah, she's having a really bad
candidates.
String of luck with endorsements.
This one is a Sarah Palin-backed congressional candidate accused of plagiarizing Obama's 2004 convention speech. Yeah, at least you didn't pick one that was too well known.
Yeah.
We have some gay friends in the... What? I wrote that.
Wow.
We worship an awesome God in the... What do you
huh?
say?
Wait.
Yeah, Vaughn Ward. Didn't you see this? Haven't you seen it online? They did a mashup. It's hilarious.
I haven't.
He gave Obama's 2004 speech,
that's
a really famous one. Vaughn, yeah, what's his name? Vaughn Ward. I don't know. Is he the one that
no
lost? I don't know when this was. Anyway, he's a candidate for Ohio's 1st Congressional District.
Ask not what your country can do for you, for we have nothing to fear but fear itself. What?
Wait, but check out how what? Hilarious this is. He got teabagged. He's the teabag candidate?
Mm-hmm.
He got teabagged by other teabaggers.
Oh, my God.
That's how crazy this is getting.
That's like a daisy chain
teabagging. It was spliced together by a Tea Party activist. What's that?
Nothing.
Yeah, pardon me? What did I miss? Mama missed something?
We'll
good.
Tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Someone will tell you off the air.
Someone heard it. Okay. A spokesman for his campaign tried to downplay the video, telling Politico the attack was a sign that folks are getting desperate. Well, yes, your candidate, for instance. The allegations come after a series of missteps for the Republican candidate's campaign. He fired his campaign manager following an embarrassing discovery that he had borrowed heavily from the campaign language of various other Republican politicians. Ward later sought to rebound from that hiccup with a high-profile appearance with Sarah Palin, who endorsed him. Back in March, but that event was slightly tarnished by multiple reports that Ward had referred to Puerto Rico as a country during a recent debate. He was not aware of that. Okay, and those are your Sarah Palin candidates so far, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. Wow, she's just the kiss of death, isn't
how's
she?
How's that twitty, quitty, and Dorsey thing going for you?
Hmm?
How's that thinky, talky thing going for you?
David in Florida, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Hang on just 1 second, please.
Okay, we'll be right here.
Please stand by.
No, wait. I wanted to get off the headset. I've been on for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I'm on a little bit of a schedule here, but
yes. Stephanie, I listen to your show every chance I get. I love it, but you got to stop apologizing for Obama. If he was half as smart as you think he is, he would have known inheriting the mess that he inherited after 30 years of deregulation might have, been a possibility of a chance of maybe something this
David,
bad.
I understand, but if you inherited the pile of mess that he inherited, do you know what I'm saying? I don't know which one you would have picked first either. And, so was this horrible luck pretty much for everybody that this happened now? Yes. Here it is. Here's the other Sarah. State Representative Nikki Haley was beginning to gain momentum in South Carolina's competitive four-way primary, especially after winning Sarah Palin's endorsement. Will Folks, a prominent South Carolina Republican blogger who was Mark Sanford's press secretary, admits, I believe, to having an affair.
Ah.
With her. Oops. Oh, dear. All right, 46 minutes after the hour, and it turns out Rand Paul is like the least crazy of all the teabagger candidates from around the country.
Rand Paul is tacking to the center quite a bit.
Uh-huh. 46. Which way is his hair tacking today? Which way is the tribble going?
He's got trouble with that tribble.
He's got trouble with his tribble. Mm-hmm. 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
On the Stephanie Miller Radio Show in suburban America. This morning.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hyped up, psyched up, ready for wildin'. Standing in a crowd of girls like a
Stephanie Miller.
I said, come here, cutie. I flip her around and then I work that booty. I came here tonight to hear the crowd go. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room. Boom, shake, shake, shake the room.
That's it. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 51 minutes after the hour.
Can I turn can I turn you around and work that booty?
I prefer that you don't. Hal Sparks tomorrow. Hump Days with Hal moved to tomorrow. Edie McClurg live in studio with the Mooks in L.A. Mm-hmm. And it's time for Face the Grayson tomorrow, the wildly popular Alan Grayson feature.
It'd be Thump Days with Thal?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
All right.
We'll play, and maybe we'll have some Thad drops, the comedy
Thad Allen. Actually, he just retired yesterday.
Oh, he did?
Yes,
how
he did.
Thad? How Thad for Thad?
But he's still going to be in charge of the cleanup. But
he's no longer employed by the administration.
Why is it we hope that someone at the goodbye ceremony has a lisp?
Oh.
Just saying. Why do we hope for that?
Thad, we hardly knew ye. It's been fabulous working with you, but
I'm sorry, we have oil spill fatigue. We're a little punchy.
Yeah.
We have, you know what, we have top kill fever today. We're, we'll apologize.
Is there anything like Pac-Man fever?
Oh, I don't know. That's like, it's back, Pac-Man. I hadn't heard those sounds in years.
Did you play that game that was on Google?
I did not.
No?
I did not. You know what I was playing with? I have Firefox. You know I use Firefox?
Yes.
I have a Firefox web browser tool that can magically erase Justin Bieber entirely from the web, which I think is... It lets you remove all mentions of Bieber from the web in one fell swoop. It's named Shaved Bieber.
Ah, no!
Yes, it evaluates any page a person is browsing and then censors all mention of the teen idol, which is...
Wow.
Somebody is doing something good with technology. It is, my friend.
Beaver, German for beaver, by the way.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. Hmm.
All right, Jim, fill in your own dirty joke here. Charlie Crist can't even get away with using an old Talking Heads song. He doesn't like his heads talking, you know what I'm saying? David Byrne is seeking $1 million in damages from Governor Charlie Crist.
Oops.
And his campaign for the use of his song earlier in the year in a YouTube ad.
Road to Nowhere
song.
That doesn't seem like a campaign type song. We're on a road to nowhere.
Yeah,
I think it was about his opponent. Or
oh,
something.
Oh, okay.
There's a hit.
Should have been Murkowski's theme song.
Yeah.
The Parents Television Council ramped up its ongoing crusade against how human beings actually speak by condemning the title of the new CBS TV series. My dad says.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Have you seen this? This is hilarious.
William Shatner is going to be starring in it.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It's based on actual tweets of Justin Halpern, who lives in the. Functions as an informal scribe for his 74-year-old father, a devotee of intemperate language. And it is actual, his dad says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The parents with Sticks Up Their Ass Television Council said CBS intentionally chose to insert an expletive in the actual name of the show, and despite its claim that the word will be bleeped, it is just CBS' latest demonstration of its contempt for families and the public.
Whatever.
God.
Ever.
Good Lord. The rod up that man's butt must have a rod up its butt.
All right. A lukewarm endorsement from Defense Secretary Robert Gates and opposition among some lawmakers cast doubt on whether Congress this week would lift the ban on gays serving openly in the military.
Yeah.
It's another watered-down compromise. What's going to happen here?
Chris,
I'm confused. A compromise was struck Monday by the White House and a small group of Democrats who fear, what they're thinking is if Republicans take back one or both houses of Congress, it's going to be doomed. So the plan would overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but still allow the military to decide when and how to implement any changes to accommodate the new policy.
Which
I don't even understand the compromise.
They never will.
Right, which means they could,
policy.
You know, shove it down the road for, you know,
put it down the memory hole.
Yes. Yeah. This was Senator Joe Lieberman, Patrick Murphy, and Carl Levin were in the senators behind this.
That the American people, I think, have decided that it doesn't make sense anymore to prohibit gay men and women who want to serve our country from doing so, particularly when our country needs the capabilities that they have.
So Levin said he wasn't sure he had enough support in the Senate to pass the measure. Speculation surfaced on it might fall one vote short. How heartbreaking would that be?
Yeah. And Scott Brown, who's the most likely Republican to vote for it, has indicated that he may or may not.
Man that used to wear pink patent leather shorts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just saying. Esmeralda even says that she would not make it disappear, that she would support it. Senator Ghostly from Maine. Penn Nelson, the conservative Democrat, declined to say how he would vote. So, yeah. Meanwhile, speaking of family groups, the Family Research Council, this was predictable. So Patrick Murphy, who is a, you know, honored vet, is one of the lawmakers behind overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They claim that he lacks respect for the military's opinion.
Excuse me?
He served the military in both Bosnia and Iraq, was awarded the Bronze Star. He has taken the lead on legislation to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now that prospects look like they could be increasing, conservatives attacking his relationship with the military. In an email last night, the Family Research Council said he doesn't respect the military's opinion.
Okay, and when...
I guess he was when he was taking bullets for his country, but
and
now...
When and how did Tony Perkins serve? I'd like to know that information, please.
I watched
the only time
combat
he's seen blood is in
I
the shower, I believe, when his mother...
No, mother, blood, no! No, I'm going to be a very bad boy. Don't join the army.
Not that Tony Perkins.
No,
the head of the Family Research Council.
Ah, who's much creepier.
Yes.
Yes.
Newt Gingrich, frankly, Wow. He was on the Dennis Miller radio show. Dennis said he had an idea how to unite the Tea Party. He said, would it not be a deft tactic to make Sarah Palin the RNC chair?
Yeah.
You go ahead and do that.
But Gingrich didn't agree, saying the current chair, Michael Steele, is doing a good job. Perfect. He said, in fact, one of the reasons the elite media attacks him is it drives the left crazy to have an African-American chairman of the RNC, because then they can't attack the RNC for being racist.
Yeah,
we can.
For example, for thinking that they needed just any black guy to counter a...
I was going to say, you know, it was really racist, Jim, them making Michael Steele the head of the RNC, who's the most incompetent boob ever to run the joint.
There's a black guy. We got a black guy, too.
As Jim Ward tried to advise them when they did it, you do get that it's not just any black
Actually,
guy, right?
Seth Meyers on SNL.
Yes.
But, you know,
all right.
I'll take credit for
whatever.
It.
All right. That's it for us. I'd like to thank executive producer Chris LeBoy, voice TV Jim Ward, associate producer Rebecca Taylor. Josh, we'll see you tomorrow for the big show on the Stephanie Miller Show.